This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3238 for Wednesday the 30th of December 2020. Today's show is entitled, Linux In-Laws S01E20, the Xmas and New Year special and is part of the series, Linux In-Laws. It is the 20th show of Monochrome, and is about 100 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, an episode on the past, present and future not just on FOSS, all will be explained.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
This is Linux In-Laws, a podcast on topics around free and open source software, any associated contraband, communism, the revolution in general, and whatever else fancies your tickle. Please note that this and other episodes may contain strong language, offensive humor, and other certainly not politically correct language. You have been warned. Our parents insisted on this disclaimer. Happy Mum! Thus, the content is not suitable for consumption in the workplace, especially when played back on a speaker in an open-plan office or similar environments. Any minors under the age of 35, or any pets, including fluffy little killer bunnies, your trusted guide dog, unless on speed, and cute T-Rexes or other associated dinosaurs. And this is Linux In-Laws. Season 1, Episode 20, the Christmas and New Year special. Hi, Martin, how are things?
Hey, Chris, things are fine and dandy.
On this, well, not too bad. What year it has been, right? About a year ago, we heard about strange rumors about a, not a flea market, but an animal market in some Chinese province. And before you know it, we are fucked.
Yep.
Of course, this is still explicit, HBR, if you're listening. So we can say words like fucked and screwed and heroin and child pornography and all the rest of it. So this show is still explicit.
We can. Not relating to the past year, though, are they really? Well, not in my case. So you could obviously divulge these things on a different episode yourself.
Indeed. Maybe we should just cut to the chase and let our listeners know what the crack is with that episode. The idea is, of course, to take a look at the current situation, or the last year rather, and then take a peek into the future. And as we actually heard on a recent episode, that predictions are pretty hard, especially if they concern the future. And that's a quote from a recent episode, actually, the big program language panel, where Mike observed that fact, and that's still very valid. Okay, Martin, let's start with the current situation. IBM and Red Hat, discuss.
It's not quite current, is it? Did that not start last year? As in 2018.
That's the year before last, I think. But you're right.
Yes. Anyway, okay. Do we think anything has changed? Personally, I don't see much Red Hat anymore, but I don't know about you.
Well, they start to fire people, if I'm not completely mistaken, right? In terms of make them redundant, and actually they do touch the brand, which they promised not to, if I'm not completely mistaken, and if press releases are anything to go by. Of course, in that case, they're probably not.
Depends how you define a change to brand, right? That's quite open to interpretation. There we go. So is this, do we think that Windows will become, okay, we're going on to future and history at the same time here. do we think that Microsoft will just be?
Was that all about Red Hat then? I thought it was more than, I thought it was more to, more to say about this. Just leave it at that.
Okay. Oh, fair enough. Okay. So Red Hat. Right. I don't see much Red Hat anymore these days. Don't know about you. But,
well, the brand is still there.
Brand is still there.
Yeah. But people are slowly, what's the word I'm looking for? Disintegrating?
Yeah.
That's probably not it. I mean, there are still, I mean, don't get me wrong. The website is there. The salespeople are there. At least here, I mean, at least here in Germany, the Red Hat people I see, well, I used to see on a regular basis in person, and now it's more like virtual these days, still claim at least the field has some sort of independence. It's probably different in the US. It's, and especially if you leave that protected realm of sales as an engineering and stuff.
Yeah, so, I mean, IBM are a little bit... a bit weird with their open source strategy, right? It they claim to support many things open source, but what do they actually do apart from buy Red Hat?
They contribute here and there. For example, they had to change. Well, Linux, of course, comes to mind.
Yes, well, I mean, everybody contributes to Linux. So that's...
Well, almost true, right? Even Microsoft does these days. Well, Apple doesn't, for example. But that's a different subject. No, I mean, they started this whole mainframe Linux thing, right? That was IBM. And fair enough, they make a lot of money from Linux, from stuff like Linux One and Friends. There's even a voice inside IBM saying that within 10 years or 15 years, MVS, sorry, it's called ZOS these days, as in their legacy mainframe operating system that has been around for at least 30 years, if not 40, will be a thing of the past. And all that is running on these old iron machines will be Linux. Which makes sense, because when you buy a ZOS system, even the smallest model actually comes with virtualization built in. You cannot get it.
Who are these people buying ZOS machines?
Well, they still do. Take a look at the balance sheet of a company called IBM. This is where this is still where a good chunk of Buddha comes from.
Yeah, but it's not actually. Well, okay, they're buying it, but they're just replacing the old stuff, right? More like maintenance.
Well, yes, but you see, there was that prediction, and as I said, predictions are always hard, in 99 or 2000 something, that the mainframe days are numbered, and now it's 2020, and they're still making a lot of money, and the mainframes are still around. I live in, full disclosure, I live in Frankfurt, Germany, and of course, as probably most of our listeners know, that will be the banking capital of Germany. And I don't know any bank that of a certain, beyond a certain size, that is, that doesn't have a significant mainframe installation, for the simple fact that the general ledger and all the rest of their mission critical software still runs on that kit and has been doing so for the last, 30, 40 years, easily.
Oh, more than that. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
So I reckon it's hard to get rid of the mainframes in certain companies beyond a certain size, full stop, because they have been around for ages. Nobody touches them. The stuff is rock solid, works. And as we all know, you never touch a running system unless you are kind of facing death or something.
Indeed.
So I reckon, coming back to Linux, yes, that would be one of their major contributions, I suppose. And if we just dig deep enough, they have been contributing to the front center. Probably, of course, not as much as Red Hat have been, or other pure open source gigs in the past before IBM bought them, let's put it this way. But they have a legacy of contributing to open source.
Yes, but they also have a large amount of proprietary products themselves, right? And
absolutely.
They seem to be, I don't know, from professional engagements, not really pushing those anymore. And they're almost like they've become a hardware vendor again and just happy to run anything open source on there, even though they have DB2 and, you know, all the quite mature software like that.
Yeah. They do a little bit of software here and there, right? Mm. Apart from Watson and the great kit that is.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that has been covered by the press recently. Apparently, there's something called Global Technology Services inside IBM. And this is mostly, I think, if current numbers or press release are anything to go by, or the stuff you read in the press anyway, apparently a thing of the past, because they're slowly dismantling this. I mean, it's hard to see where IBM is going in general, because clearly much of their revenue is coming from hardware. And things like Watson never really were that commercial breakthrough. I mean, fair enough. Full credit to them. They were one of the first companies to make quantum computing publicly accessible at a fee and at a discounted fee for educational purposes. But D-Wave and friends are just taking away the revenue in terms of they make money with this, and IBM probably doesn't in the greater scheme of things.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with IBM's balance books, but
this is probably
I suspect they're making some money.
Well, IBM, if you want to get in touch for some almost free advice, the email address is feedback@linuxinlaws.eu. Just send a mail.
Indeed. And we'll
get in touch.
Send sponsorship. Yep. All these things are allowed and available. So on a related
subject. And yes, we are cheap.
Well,
we are way cheaper than Mainframe. Yeah.
On a related subject. So what is the next Linux acquisition going to be? This is a future question, obviously.
But I mean, define Linux acquisition. I mean, Linux.
Well, okay. Stuff. So, no, not Linux buying stuff, but so Micro Focus bought SUSE, Red Hat was bought by IBM or whatever it is, and so yeah, there's not many. What about Canonical? Right, where are they going next? Who's going to buy them?
Well, there has been that vicious rumor on the block for at least 3 or 4 years now that actually Microsoft will make a grab for this.
Taking the time, if it's 3 to 4 years.
But it's hard to imagine, right? I mean, fair enough, they did a lot of collaboration on something called WSL, because, for example, Ubuntu was actually the first personality for want of, or sorry, distribution, to use the correct term here, that actually was running on WSL version 1.
I have a question for you. Do you know anybody who runs WSL?
Well, yes, I do.
You do? Okay.
I do, yes.
Are they very happy with it?
Well, it's, let's put it this way, it's okay.
And why?
What I hear.
Why do they, are they doing this?
Because it runs on Windows, and that's probably the best subsystem from a Linux perspective that you can get, because Cygwin only goes so far in France. Unless you want to put a VM. Or want to use Docker into play. Yeah. Or want to use Docker or something. I mean, the beauty is with WSL 2.0, you actually have a Linux kernel, a full Linux kernel at your disposal. And performance is better. And yes, of course, just pick the distribution of your choice. Doesn't have to be Ubuntu anymore. Just take a look at the in the Windows Store.
I just don't get it. It's like, why would you do this? I still haven't found a use case for running WSL.
I just got to crack open another can there. Sorry. It is year end, so we just might as well celebrate a little bit. No, it's quite straightforward. If people, I just take a look at your ordinary corporate developer that.
What, do you want the one with the locked down PC, you mean?
That's exactly it. Exactly.
They're not going to allow them to install WSL, are they?
I mean, they get the images from corporate IT. Funny enough, these images would be, have a guess, exactly Windows. Now they have to deploy, they have to deploy in production, of course, on a Linux basis, because this is what these hipsters from DevOps basically tell them that, no, seriously, that, no, sorry, you cannot deploy on Windows anymore because we just did away with these few remaining Windows servers in production. So if the new kid on the block for the last, what, 20 plus years, well, not 20, but let's say 7 to 10 years. Well, here's a little bit of a tidbit for you. As probably some of our listeners knows, no, sorry, I was employed by somebody, by a company called Verizon previously, and I was in charge of, funny enough, selling hosting environments on an EMEA basis. And so I had access to cloud figures. Verizon had their fair share of cloud products, ranging from virtual public clouds right up to infrastructure as a service and all the rest of it. So while I was working there, I had insight into deployment figures, and there was only one direction for Windows Server deployments, and that was downwards rapidly. So on the other side, Linux was just going up, was going through the roof. So the thing is, going back to this image question, if you have no other choice than either using Docker, a VM, or WSL, you probably go for the easiest solution. Funny enough, on Windows, I reckon that will be WSL, because it comes with the operating system, getting it up and running, in contrast to, what's it called? VirtualBox and Friends, sorry. It's just a breeze, and off you go. And as I said, it's you don't have to install it. It's there. You just have to pick the list of your choice, and then you have a full Linux usernet at your disposal.
No, sorry. It's not for me. So, yeah.
Hang on, Martin. You are not working at a company that does corporate images, right?
Well, a company that has corporate images and expects people to develop for Linux should probably provide their developers with the appropriate equipment rather than trying to get them to mess around with Windows.
Well, if the IT plays along. But you see, just take your ordinary tier 1, tier 2 company. These companies like General Electric, Siemens, and all the rest of them. I mean, either you give a developer a separate laptop that runs Linux, but that doesn't have access to the corporate network. Good luck with that. Or you give it a hardened image that is normally a desktop image, which of course is Windows-based. The call is yours.
I don't know. I see quite a lot of Macs these days, but I don't know about you.
Martin, anyway. Sorry.
Especially amongst us.
Exactly. You're working at this hipster startup that peddles GPU databases. I mean, come on. This is not your tier one, tier two company with 100,000 plus employees. There is a difference.
Yeah, I suspect they move a little bit slower, don't they?
Plus security would be what at the very top of their concern list, I suppose. And this is the reason basically why.
Are you saying that Linux is not secure?
No. The stuff that I'm saying is actually they have access to Windows components and can harden their own images. Now, if they would do the same for Linux, they would have two platforms to support. Doesn't make much sense from a commercial perspective, does it? This is the reason why they're going normally for Windows.
But then they have to support WSL for Windows, don't they? Anyway. Just don't do it. Just forget about WSL. It's
not, Microsoft. It's no use. If you want to get in touch about sponsoring options,
just by canonical.
The email address is feedback@linuxinlaws.eu. We should actually create a corporate sponsoring email address
for all the large amount of inquiries we get. Yes, indeed. Much easier to deal with the inbox.
So let's create, what should we call it, Martin? cash@linuxinlaws.eu.
Hey, here.
Makes sense to me, yeah. Cool. Let's get in touch with our IT operation support so that they can do it. or have you fired them already? Martin has a little
They keep complaining about the number of tickets and stuff. I might have to consider.
Martin has a little bit of, full disclosure, Martin has a little bit of a habit of simply firing the department if they don't play along.
Oh, this is our prerogative.
Yes. But no worries, I keep hiring them back, so that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. On to the next subject. So
the next subject, probably, yes.
So probably Microsoft won't buy Canonical. That would be my take on the situation.
Well, if they haven't done it in the last 3 or 4 years, then yeah.
No, they haven't.
What has changed, right? In the time for them to do so. However, they are spinning Edge, though, aren't they?
Microsoft. Yes and no, right? I mean, funny enough, they get into hardware more and more, right? I mean, the Surface line of computers. I think they do a thing called Xbox, if I'm completely mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
That is quite sought after too. Exactly. What's it called? Five or something, right? I'm not a gamer, so for full disclosure, no, I don't play.
It's PlayStation. It's PlayStation.
Sorry, see, Martin. There you go. So what's the latest play? What's the latest Xbox then?
Series X or S, right?
Okay. And that has your usual 10 CPUs, 15 GPUs, and a couple of SoCs built into them. No, I mean, seriously, the first couple of Xbox, when I looked at the spec, they were quite impressive.
Yep. Yeah.
And I reckon that hasn't changed.
Hardware, indeed. Well, they're also not cheap, right? This is...
How much do they cost these days? As I said, I don't play at all, so...
I don't know what they cost in euros, but...
They're more expensive than PlayStations?
If you can find one, they're around £500-600, I think, in those sort of regions. So.
And what is that in real money?
In euros, so probably a couple of thousand, no?
Nice one, Martin! Kids, don't worry. In the future, just get them from the UK. If Microsoft hasn't copped on to the conversion rate, which will go through the floor, is that what I'm looking for? Once Brexit has hit, because as we all know, in about 3 years' time, I will buy the UK for six pack, I suppose. But that's a different subject.
Excellent.
Maybe 2 6 packs. I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Just add to the collection of over the whole Greece, aren't we?
Exactly.
Okay. If you're listening, what's his name? Damn, I forgot his name now.
Sorry, Brian Johnson. If you're listening, don't get in touch. No, just simply don't. There's no point, you see. We only want real money, not pounds. That's okay. Anyway.
Right.
Don't worry, okay.
Yes, don't worry. Next subject, I think, isn't it? Yes, we've talked about Red Hat. So, the next subject. Right. This is one for you, I think. So, well, there's more mainframe stuff, so I think that's more for the old people amongst us.
Thank you. So what's the question then?
Something about Linux One saving the mainframe. I thought you just made a claim that the mainframe didn't need saving because nobody touched it anyway.
Well, I mean, I reckon, the question is almost half answered, right? The first time, full disclosure, that's about 4 years back, maybe 3 years, when I first logged into a Linux One system. Actually, you can get them for free for a period of time. Just check out the IBM, full disclosure, just check out the IBM website. All you need is an account and a mobile number. Once you have this, you have access to, I think, 30 days of a 2-core virtualized mainframe partition. Running a user land of your choice. That would include Ubuntu, Red Hat, and the usual suspects. The first time I checked this out, and I reckon it hasn't changed much, it looked like an ordinary Linux. There was no tangible difference. As a matter of fact, I gave a presentation at an open source conference about 2 years ago. Where I ported something called Redis, some people may be familiar with an in-memory NoSQL database, on a Linux One system running Red Hat in about 45 seconds, because all I had to do was clone the GitHub repo and simply compile it. And then it worked out of the box like a charm. There was no difference between OS X, in that case, the OS X experience for Redis, or any other Linux Intel-based, or even ARM-based. You just put it down, you compile it, it works.
Hmm.
Only much more performant. Much faster. That's what I'm looking for. Because you have about 50 years of engineering expertise at your fingertips. Give or take a few.
Right. So Linux, so this hardware.
Well, you see, if that stuff wasn't so damn expensive, I would have one myself. But you're looking at, I think, entry level, at least these kind of black cupboards. You're looking at one digit or something.
Hmm.
That kit doesn't come cheap, but it's called System Z or Z-Series or whatever the current name is for a reason. These machines don't have any downtime. Hence the notion zero, as in zero downtime.
I thought it was called one.
You just flip them on, so and they run.
No,
Linux One is, I don't know, it's probably a marketing term. I don't know. Maybe it's the first real Linux system ported to mainframe and running out of the box without a little bit of kernel tampering or something. I don't know. Ask IBM.
Okay, right. I'm sure a lot of our open source listeners will be talking to IBM specifically about Red Hat, but not about buying a mainframe. Okay, cool. So,
here's a question for you.
Okay.
Yes. Will Skynet become NVIDIA once again, Martin? What do you think, given the fact that you own NVIDIA kit?
Why once again?
Well, for avid listeners,
one and the same already, or have I missed one?
No, for our avid listeners, of course, I don't need to explain that, but for those people who missed that episode in March, I think it was, as we all know, Skynet came out of NVIDIA. So the question is actually, will Skynet shed its evil, what's the word I'm looking for?
It will reveal itself, is what we're saying.
Will Skynet shed its evil shell and become just a proprietary hardware vendor again?
But they are a proprietary hardware vendor.
Skynet? No, Skynet is some evil AI ruling the planet.
Well, I thought Skynet was NVIDIA. Skynet evolved from NVIDIA. You got this wrong, yeah. Okay. If we are talking about, what do you call those people that aspire to rule the world?
Martin Visser.
Donald Trump, no.
For disclosure, Martin Visser is not a revolutionary slash world dominator, denominator? No, what's the word I'm looking for?
Yeah. Dictatorship is more of a country, isn't it? But there are these people that try to rule the
global
world
dictator?
Also. Okay, global dictator, that will do. Yeah, there's a few of those aspiring to the job, aren't there? At moments.
Well, Trump has failed. That chap in North Korea has clearly failed.
Yeah, well, they're clearly doing it wrong because they're doing it through politics, whereas you're much better doing it through software or or hardware. <right? laughs> They obviously
Donald,
haven't caught on to this.
Donald, if you're listening, stop tweeting and send email to feedback@linuxalliance.eu. Yes.
You need some advice.
In case you need some advice, exactly how to swing back any kind of swing state or whatever, just get in touch with us. We can probably sort you out. Maybe not.
Indeed. Anyway, so going back to global dictators, right. So we have, who do we have? We have the weirdo from Tesla. What's his name?
Elon Musk.
Yes, that's him. Then we have obviously our friend from Amazon.
Of course, there's also Nikola Tesla, but I think he's dead.
Yes, he's definitely dead. Yeah. Well, unless he invented the time travel at the same time, but who knows, right? He's not going to tell anybody. where were we? So yeah, so we have
Vladimir Putin comes to mind.
No, he's in politics. He's going to fail. Yeah. You have to be.
You think so? Okay.
Yeah, You have to be in hardware or software or bookshops or stuff like that, right? So we have Elon Musk, Bob Bezos, and then there's obviously our friend from Skynet, Jensen Huang. Who else have we got?
Well, you know more than I do about this.
So yeah, there's kind of, you know, who out of those three is going to be the global dictator, do you reckon?
None, I suppose.
None. Okay. Why?
I mean, Bezos. I don't know. Where does this
Jeff, if you're listening, can you tell us how you pronounce your name? Griffin's struggling.
Send email to feedback at linuxinlaws.eu. Exactly. Where does Bezos even come from? It's a Greek name or something?
Oh, is it the Greeks again? Hang on a minute.
I do not know. Maybe you can deploy a search engine of your choice, Martin, and find out while I'm rambling on.
I thought he was American.
Well, by birth, but the name clearly is not English descent.
Hang on a minute, that is not his actual name. There we go.
What?
His actual name is Jurgensen.
You're making this up, right?
No, I'm not making this.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Jeff Jurgensen.
Mm.
He doesn't look German, though, or Danish or whatever.
Well, I mean, lots of people out of these countries went to America, right?
Why did he rename himself?
Well, he obviously decided, I need to... he heard about NextOS, and I'm going to be BezOS instead.
Oh, fucking hell. Jeff, if you're listening, get in touch and feedback. Why did you change your name, Jurgensen?
Yes.
And this comes from a reputable source like Wikipedia or something?
Indeed. Unless you hacked it in the meantime. I wasn't watching.
I did not.
Okay, good.
I wouldn't interfere with reputable sources like Wikipedia. Why should I? I mean, the most I would do if I choose to do so would hack away their pledge banner.
Okay. Hang on. No, it's because his parents, his mother was married twice. And so his stepfather is a Mike Bezos. There you go.
And that doesn't answer the question where Bezos comes from. Is in so the not, name Bezos.
It's Mexican, apparently.
Mexican?
Cuban. There we go. So not no Bezos, one, but Bezos.
No wonder Trump hates him because he's an immigrant of sorts.
He probably also has a lot more money than Trump.
Well, and he bought papers that are not exactly Trump-friendly. Let's put it this way. The Washington Post comes to mind, of course. Mm. And yes, so...
Okay, so what do Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk have in common?
Money. Lots of it.
apart from that...
A certain...
Okay, apart from the desire to rule the world as well, they have another desire.
Drive comes to mind.
I'm sure they have a car, but yeah.
That's not what I meant.
I was referring to the fact that they're both trying to also rule space, right?
There is no such thing as drivity in the English language, if I'm completely mistaken. So, this is one full disclaimer. This is one of the few occasions where I'm actually lost for words. Doesn't happen that often.
Indeed. Yeah.
Where were we? They have a certain kind of ambition, let's put it this way.
Yes, ambition to rule space as well, yep.
Bezos has just to get married once again, and then he's going to be broke. I mean, the first wife took away how many billions?
I don't know.
1 point something,
I don't read those kind of newspapers. or Hello Magazine, sure whatever it is.
I'm sure it's on Wikipedia too. Just look it up. people, for all these billionaire wannabes out there, don't get married.
Bad idea.
If you do get married, if you make that fatal mistake, just have a prenup in place. Very important.
It doesn't
and something that is watertight, that cannot be kind of argued about in the court of law. Mm. Because if you're marrying the wrong woman, sorry, Martin, this is important for all the partying people out there,
for all the billionaires amongst our listeners.
So I mean, the bottom line is, if you then make that fatal mistake of getting married, just make sure that the prenup is watertight, so you're not taken apart in a court of law. Should you actually get a divorce, this is the important bit. Of course, that all saves you if you don't get married in the first place.
Well, yes and no. If you have 180 billion anyway, then does it matter if you lose 90, right? What are you going to do with it?
But I think the wife got half of it, no?
Yeah, so okay, so he still has 90 billion or whatever it is. It's kind of, yeah.
So the bottom line is, of course, we just have to buy more at Amazon. That's going to pay it off. Listeners, just buy more, because Jeff Bezos is in dire need of cash.
Yes. Okay, so prediction for 2021. Who out of those three is going to be the most maddest global dictator?
Nobody, because they won't rule. Well, maybe Bezos through Amazon, but I'm not too sure, because yeah, I mean, you heard about the French protest, right? Yesterday or whenever it was. French protests.
Oh, they're protesting every day. It's nothing new.
Yes, but they were special. People took to the streets in France because more and more people are just buying online, and they're afraid that all the local shops in the current lockdown, recording this kind of late November, early December, will simply disappear. And of course, they have a point. You just have to take a look at the numbers.
Yeah.
Amazon is hiring people in troves.
Mm-hmm.
Bezos company, when was it? I think in March or April or something like this, maybe May, look it up, people, has announced they would be creating 100,000 jobs or a somewhat similar region within the next month.
In which country?
Globally.
Globally? Oh, that's not that much.
That's
okay.
A huge number.
Well, not if you're all paying them 2p an hour, then. Yeah, they're probably not too worried about it.
They don't, because the majority of the countries where Amazon is peddling things have minimum wages. Germany, UK, as well as the US comes to mind.
Yes, I suppose.
My point?
Our Far Eastern Amazon has no such thing, but anyway. Yeah, so you say none of them, okay?
So Bezos,
oh, that's not much of a prediction, is it?
Bezos may have a slim chance to maybe get close, but apart from that, that's it, I suppose.
Hmm.
What about this Richard guy running this GPU database outfit? Yeah. Why doesn't he feature on this list? Too small?
No, we have a 4-year plan, not a 1-year plan.
See, Richard, if you're listening, if you want to send cash, don't give it to Martin. Just get in touch at cash@linuxinlaws.eu.
Oh, while we're talking on this subject, are Yiftach and Offer listening to this?
I suppose not. The latest, that's what I heard. That may, of course, change. With the recent Itamar episode, if you haven't been listening, this is series 1, episode 19. Itamar reveals it all, especially why he wanted to become a mermaid. The important bit. If there's 3 episodes out of the last year, this is one of them that you're going to listen to. Yes, sorry, we were on the subject of it. Oh, no, the question is probably not. They're too busy with other things, I suppose.
Okay. Right. So no chance of a sponsorship there either, then?
Probably not.
Okay.
Unless Britlet will be bought by Redis Labs.
Well, that would be, not entirely.
Full disclosure, this is purely assumptional, people. We are not insiders, on that level anyway, and we are certainly not out there to make a financial bargain on this one. At least not I am. Anyway.
place any bets on any of these predictions.
Exactly.
Our advice.
Full disclosure, we are not responsible for what we say at all on this podcast. And this is a legally binding statement.
Yeah, agree.
Okay.
Okay. Yes.
Next question.
Okay.
Yes, Martin, this is good for you. Will strong artificial intelligence finally prevail and make the jump to mainstream?
Well, it depends what you call mainstream, but it is already amongst many households in various forms, right? We have our Alexas, we have our other devices, we have our Teslas, etc.
Is this all really powered by AI?
Yeah.
I mean, kind of, you see, the thing is, the clue
you think
is
that's
here.
That's the little guy sitting on the other end of the
No, hang on. The clue is actually in the term, will strong artificial intelligence. I'm not talking about weak.
Okay.
Like the stuff that is domain specific, like the stuff that just recognizes pattern essentially. Strong AI, in contrast to this, would have eventually the ability to form something called a conscience. And this is the clue.
What is that thing? GTP 183 or something, or what's his number?
Not hyperspace, but what's the movie I'm looking for? Not Sam, but hang on. The one with the computer and it's a classic, Martin. Happy hour.
Hello, Hal. Or
yes, Hal is the computer's name. It's actually in the acronym IBM, of course.
Slightly distracted.
And the name of the movie was not cyberspace, but deep space. No,
2001 Space Odyssey. No?
Yes, thank you. That was it. And this is what I would consider to be almost a strong AI.
But you know the conversational AI thing.
Eliza?
No.
A strong AI.
GPT something or other. You're not familiar with that one?
I do not know.
Okay. You're behind the times. So this is a project.
Martin,
AI,
I'm just a humble free and open source / operating system nerd. I'm always behind the times. Even if I am wearing my hipster beard. Which I'm
right. Not. You're not? No?
I'm not.
What happened? You're no longer a hipster. You're giving an update on the hipster dumb.
No, the beard is history, but has been for the last 40 plus years, but that's a different story. Anyway, carry on.
Okay. Martin. Right. So anyway, OpenAI, familiar with them? No.
The OpenAI, no, it doesn't. It doesn't ring a bell. Please do explain.
Okay. Anyway, they made some impressive stuff with, GPT-3, which is short for Generative Pre-trained Transformer, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, but this is a piece of software that can be considered to be a next generation, because it can lie, it can make jokes, these kind of things, right? And when it chooses to, not because it's programmed to do it on a certain occasion. So it can have a decent conversation with someone. Links in show notes.
This is like a GAN, a generative adversarial network.
It's really a language model. A subject of a whole different episode.
but Martin, a language model is domain specific. Why would that be strong AI? I wonder.
No. Why is language domain specific?
Because it's not context free. It's context specific.
But you are losing language. Language is there to describe everything, so it's not context specific. Language is for everything.
Language is the domain, and a conscience is not necessarily about languages.
The domain language is a communication mechanism.
Yes, but a conscience is not necessarily bound to language.
No, but it's a way to express it. It's a bit difficult for people to read people's minds.
Yes, but you see,
unless I missed something.
Telepathy is not expressed in English or Chinese or German for that matter. You just read people's minds. That's the way it works.
Yes.
And this is what I would consider to be not close, but almost there. In terms of, you have a conscience, you know, you can drive conclusions without the domain at hand. You're able to learn beyond the domain. You develop a conscience. You probably know what's good, what's bad. Your specific backyard, of course, because as we all know, probably the mafia and the IBA and the FBI have different notions of what's good and bad. So, but they all have a conscience.
They do?
This is what, yeah, of course they do.
No, no,
I, whether that's a good
or FBI had a conscience
that remains to be seen. But you see, the news thing is basically, well, we are talking about humans, right?
About your conscience.
Well, and humans do have conscience in contrast to certain animals who do not. Or which do not, rather, because they're not people. And this is what I mean by strong AI. A strong AI certainly has the ability to draw conclusions beyond a specific domain for which they have been trained for.
Like, yeah, but the point is that GPT-3 is trained on 175 billion parameters and knows everything about everything.
Okay.
And can lie and can make jokes and stuff. So worth looking at, I would suggest.
So we are close in that case.
It's quite impressive if you compare to what we've seen so far from the likes of Deep Speech, for example.
And
different matter.
And that runs on different GPU types too, not just NVIDIA?
Oh, I don't know what it runs on, but
you'll find the link in the show notes, of course.
A fun fact, the technology has been licensed to Microsoft. So, yeah.
Microsoft is
challenging for this world domination.
Lying goes a long way, right? I mean, you're almost there in that case.
Mm. Well, mainly choosing when to and not as well, right? It's
this is where we're getting close to a fine art, because humans have been perfecting this for at least the last 100,000 years, give or take a few. This is where we come from. This is all this social interaction and stuff. Independent, I might add, of cultural heritage and background.
Indeed.
Facial expressions and all the rest of it. Social engineering works in different languages too.
Mm.
So, I mean, and if we have something that comes close, yes, I would consider that to be the next big thing in strong artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's worth a look. Anyway. Okay, so make the jump to mainstream. Okay, if we're talking about strong AI, probably not mainstream yet next year, but certainly within the next 5 years.
Mm.
Okay, I have a question for you as well.
Go ahead.
What happened to Docker and Kubernetes?
Oh, they're still around, I suppose.
They are. However... Do we just think that people will actually start using this properly? Specifically Kubernetes, right?
Yeah, I mean, just take a look at any hipster or non-hipster DevOps team that doesn't use containers. I mean, if you're serious about cloud, chances are you are using containers. So Docker Swarm hasn't made it. So Kubernetes has clearly won the game, and OpenShift and Rancher and you name it.
Indeed. Well, sorry, OpenShift and Rancher. What about them? They are not quite as popular as Kubernetes, right?
I would reckon. I mean, if you're Red Hat shop, it goes the other way around. I mean, the jury is still out on kind of generic, as in vanilla Kubernetes, as in the likes of GKE and stuff, as in Google Kubernetes Engine. and OpenShift, but I reckon if you're a Red Hat shop, you will be using OpenShift. And if you are anywhere near clouds, containers are your deployment method of choice, even on-prem or hybrid environments. If you're not running on a mainframe, full disclosure, probably will have some containerized element in it when it comes down to deployments.
Hmm. Yeah, it's agreed on that. But it's just that. So the main question, I think, around this one is that, yes, Docker is there for a lot of pieces of the application. But I've still yet to see organizations adopting Kubernetes in full capacity, right? It just tends to be sort of limited to pieces of applications and bits and pieces like that.
As a matter of fact, I know, full disclosure, one of my hobbies is working as a solution architect for a company called Redis Labs.
Hmm.
And in that capacity, I do come across a lot of customers / prospects who are looking for a NoSQL database fitting their needs. And the majority of them who are just in the process of re-architecting the application landscape are serious about microservices. And guess what? 11 out of 10 would be going for containers.
11 out of 10.
Yes. Indeed, Mark. 11 out of 10.
Are they going for containers 110% version?
If not more, yes. And
excellent.
Indeed. And funny enough, whether cloud or not, because Swarm didn't make it, Kubernetes would be the orchestration framework of choice for them. Because A, it runs on any platform you can think of, and the distribution specific things like OpenShift come with your platform of choice that you have in production anyway. Red Hat, of course, comes to mind. Simple.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a question of if, but rather when. Okay. If you haven't done this already.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see some stats on this, but
Martin, just break into any T2, any T1 company on this planet, check out the deployments, and you'll be amazed. Just don't get caught. I'm just saying.
Okay, that's a handy tip from the in-laws. Do not get caught.
full disclaimer, kids. Even if you're a trained professional, do not break into other people's systems. They do not like this. Very important.
Important advice here. Yes, listen to Grandad Chris here.
Yes! The two old chaps on the show.
talking of old chaps, where are the grumpy old coders? Are they going to turn up one day or not?
Funny enough, Martin, full disclosure, they are younger than us. Both of them.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
They are.
Could have fooled me. Anyway, back on the subject of...
Full disclosure, people, Martin is easily fooled. But that's okay.
All right, where were we? Right, Docker and Kubernetes. Okay, so, then following on from that, I guess, is the whole cloud question.
There are these things up in the sky, right?
Is anybody not going to have a cloud-only solution in 2021?
Well, I mean, it's 2020 is past. I mean, this is almost done. I mean, cloud is there. I mean, there's no dispute about this. So that's another tick in the checkbox. Check the tick box, whatever.
Yes, but are the likes of Microsoft and Google going to make any progress into the bookshop? And if so, how?
Well, Microsoft is growing quicker than is growing quicker in absolute numbers than the bookshop is.
Absolute numbers of what? Customers or?
No, in terms of growth rate. Just take a look at the numbers.
How are you measuring this growth rate?
In terms of new customers.
Okay.
Going onto the platform. I mean, the bookshop has a couple of years to their advantage, but then Microsoft does have its Enterprise Salesforce.
Yeah. Well, it has also and Office, that, right? And Teams, don't forget Teams.
Well, you see, Teams in Office came after that Enterprise Salesforce. Well, Office almost. But you see, the thing is, Microsoft has it down to this kind of Salesforce turned into, what's what I'm looking for? Sorry. Microsoft has down its enterprise sales force down to fine art in terms of selling into enterprises because they have been doing little else apart from their somewhat fledgling B2C business for the last 30 years. If you go into any larger company on this planet, the desktops normally run Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about shops now beyond your kind of a couple of thousand employees. I'm talking about the tier 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 companies on this planet, like companies that have more than, say, 20 to 40,000 employees. I have yet to come across a company that doesn't in that size, that doesn't run Windows on their corporate desktops.
Yeah.
So they have a Salesforce. And if the IT department is looking for a cloud solution, if they are already on the bookshop platform, just put a migration strategy in front of them, make the numbers juicy, and they migrate. Unfortunately, I'm not at liberty to name a few companies that have gone down that route. But believe me, my guess would be that Microsoft would eat into a fair share of the AWS revenue come 2021, 2022.
Hmm.
You already see this happen. I mean, just look at retail, best example. Why would I fund the competition being a retailer? Amazon is eating into my core business, selling kit. Why give them money? Simple question. Supermarkets, wholesale, the whole retail business, apparel, whatever. Why host an Amazon
if that's another handy I'm funding,
the competition by doing this? I'd rather go to Microsoft because Microsoft is not in the business of selling food or apparel or something else.
Hmm.
They just sell IT kit, full stop. Maybe the odd hardware, but that's about it. Same goes for Google. Google doesn't have a supermarket. Google doesn't sell apparel. They power the people to do so. And there's a difference between a marketplace and Amazon and Google just auctioning ad spaces. A marketplace, they all take revenue cuts, don't get me wrong. But a marketplace is an actual facilitator for a trade. The ads are just the first step. And Google shouldn't make one mistake, go down the Amazon route, because that'll certainly eat into their cloud business.
So it sounds like you're a bit of a Microsoft fan. Should we
Microsoft, if you're listening,
with Yiftach an offer? Hang on, they've done that already, haven't they?
Yes. A
recent announcement.
Yes, indeed.
What was the announcement again?
Redis Labs, if you want to sponsor us, the address is cash@linux.
Yeah, we're not telling you otherwise.
You can just sponsor in general. You cannot buy ad slots, I'm afraid. Sorry. Moving on to the next question, Martin. Apple M1, the beginning of the end for Intel. That's a very interesting one, no?
Well, it's not just Apple. It's also the acquisition of ARM by NVIDIA, right? So if it goes
ahead, Martin. Spill the beans.
Spill the beans? What beans? What?
I mean, you're NVIDIA customer, so go ahead.
Well, you're an ARM customer. You're an ARM customer, aren't you? I also have Intel, yeah.
I'm not an ARM customer. I just buy from companies who implemented their SoCs. SoC designs, rather.
Yeah. Anyway, so what was the question? and for Intel, yes.
for the slower among us, let me repeat the question there. Apple M1, the beginning of the end for Intel.
It seems unlikely, right? I mean, I don't know what percentage of kit runs on Intel, but it is a very large percentage. So not even the aforementioned cloud vendors, a large amount of their instance types are Intel, even though you see a lot more AMD as well these days. So, yeah, interesting question. It has been done before, I guess. Chip makers go by the wayside, but I don't think Apple's handful of dodgy MacBooks is really going to make a huge impression.
How many MacBooks do you own, Martin? Two?
No, I'm back down to one because the second one was no good whatsoever.
Okay.
Apple, if you're listening, your quality is shit.
If you want to change that statement, get in touch at Akash. We can redact this, of course. And we may not be expensive as you think. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay. No, my just end. You're spot on. Okay. The thing is, the M1, I don't know if you've checked this out, but the M1 has a couple of very cool features.
Yeah, serious piece of engineering, yeah.
For example, this neurological something, SoC, portion, die, whatever.
Mm.
The thing is, basically, these specialized sub-processors have been around for ages. SSE2, MM2, come to mind. It took the software manufacturers ages to adopt this. There was a stillborn called Giselle by Arm, as a matter of fact. That was succeeded by something called Thumbcell, I think, if I'm completely mistaken. Essentially, the idea was behind these two designs to execute JVM instructions, as in Java Virtual Machine instructions, natively. If you take a look at the largest ARM platform out there called Android, they don't use it. Simple. So hence the notion of a stillborn, because the adaption simply didn't take place. They put it out there. You could buy the SoC components as in a license them from ARMS, but only very few people did. Giselle was, I think, released in 2003 and Damsel came 2005 or 2006. But the adoption was very little, if at all. Same goes for this new M1 functionality. If the developers don't avail of this, what's the point?
Yes, but I mean, this is Apple's only IP, right? It's not going to be available in anything else than Apple.
That's it. And it's restricted to Macs, exactly.
Yeah.
Or maybe iPads, iPhones, whatever.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, we're looking at a desktop share of single digits or something in the greater scheme of things. Plus the fact that, of course, Intel has much more at their disposal than just the desktop. Just take a look at their recent shift into the server space. Mm. If you take a look at their investments, Xeon and friends have come on very strong in comparison to what's that architecture called? iCore or something, right? As in the desktop processors. Because clearly the future, especially what Martin just has just said, the future is cloud. So we all had this before, right?
Mm.
If you go back, yes, to the mainframes, you had terminals.
Mm.
These days, it's actually Chromebooks and the like, as in thin clients that connect to the cloud. The paradigm is still the same. You have dumb clients, inverted commas, connecting to a very powerful processing unit. Mm-hmm. Then it was the mainframe. Now it's other people's computers called the cloud. So the principle hasn't changed, just the technology is slightly more advanced, let's put it this way. But at the end of the day, I reckon the likes of Intel and AMD still have their place, and they will survive, Apple or not. It's just a matter of getting their innovation cycles right.
Indeed. I'll tell you something that's impressive about the M1 is its production process.
They do cool stuff, right? Like,
it's allegedly is 5 nanometer, which is way better than anything that Intel
does. Plus the fact that apparently the memory between the different SoC die parts is interconnected, so the GPU can directly read from the memory that the CPU is writing to, without having to cross a bus or something like this, as in an inter chip bus. This is pretty cool because there's a lot of speed up. Trouble is, of course, it comes in two varieties. You can buy it either with 8 gigabytes of RAM or 16. You cannot extend the memory.
Hmm.
This is the drawback.
8 gigabytes.
8 versus 16, yeah. I'm talking about MacBook Pros now. As in the 13-inch models that have just been released in November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, if you take this apart, I saw a photo these days. If you take this apart, it doesn't look like a ordinary mainboard anymore. It's just a couple of components brought together. So the stuff is really integrated. And forget about extending this manual or at your disposal. You just can't. You buy the kit as it is, or you just leave it.
Mm. Yeah, it's quite impressive what they've done. But yeah, it's obviously only limited
this kit doesn't come cheap. I checked out a 13-inch MacBook Pro over lunch today.
Okay.
16 gig, 512 SSD sets you back 2,200 euros.
Yeah.
And that's just a 13-inch model.
Yeah. Well, I won't be buying one. But Apple, if you're listening, feel free to send one and then we can...
the address is reviews@linuxinlaws.eu. Yes, and if you send us two, we will review this machine. No worries. Get in touch.
Okay. Where were we? Apple M1, yes. Okay. What is the... Any major shakeups in the programming languages for next year, we think?
Not likely. I mean, Rust has clearly won, but that's a given. That's a known fact.
What has actually won? What has won a medal?
Java people, if you're listening out there, my consolations.
Yes.
To quote a friend of mine, if you see Java, just run.
That sounds like a solid piece of advice.
I wonder who this friend is. Anyway, doesn't matter. No, I mean, what's your take on this, Martin? Given the fact that you're still an old JavaScript programmer or Kotlin or whatever it was.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, I've seen some articles saying that Python's growth is slowing down and stuff like that. But
like what?
Hmm?
Like what?
Well,
Dart.
No. Python. Let's talk about Python.
Sorry, you mentioned a programming language called DAT.
No.
Sorry, I got this wrong. This is my old age.
Language is failing here.
Indeed,
we need a GPT-3 trained model to replace Chris, I think.
Please repeat.
Where were we? Okay, so yeah, no. Okay, what I was saying was that I've seen a few mentions about Python becoming a little bit too mainstream and its growth is slowing down and things like that. But personally, I haven't seen any evidence of that from the people and customers I talk to. Now, someone keeps going on about Rust, but yeah, C++ is...
Quite a few people, actually.
Okay, two ones then, not what, just someone, but two ones. Some twos, there we go.
I'll just make it millions, that's okay, no worries.
Okay, but C++ is still driving still the majority of low latency, high performance applications, yeah. Right? So.
But you see, even Microsoft, yes, Microsoft indeed, There was a talk.
Are you sure they're not sponsoring us? Or are they just sponsoring you or something?
No, neither Mark, I'm afraid, okay. Neither, unfortunately, no. But Microsoft sure is listening, sorry. Okay, fair enough. No, there was a talk at a conference in May or June or something where Microsoft talked about Rust. And it's clearly their next big thing in contrast to C++, which apparently is on the way out, after having been the workhorse at Microsoft for at least 20 years.
Well, we did an interview with someone from C++, someone from Python, yes, and from Rust. And I think what I recall was that C++ is not going anywhere. but yeah, anytime soon.
I mean, it still has its place, don't get me wrong, but there are new technologies out there which are clearly more fitting for some use cases.
Yes, but if we're talking about 2021, then do we think anything will change in that in a year's time? Programming language adoption.
sorry, Martin, you were saying about 2021.
Yes, 2021 programming languages. I don't think much will change. Where is Rust on the list of programming language popularity?
Fastest growing programming language in popularity globally.
Fastest growing.
If Chiobi, as in the importance of being earnest, other programming language indexes for anything to go by.
Okay.
It used to be Python, but I think now it's Rust.
Yes, but that doesn't mean, okay, it's fastest growing, but where is it on the list of being used, right?
I reckon Rust is now in the top 20, I think. Python, I think, is place number 2 or 3 or something. Up with the likes of C, that have been around for 50 years now. I mean, if you take a look at the GitHub code base, I mean, the whole shebang, I mean, a good chunk would still be written in C.
Which code base? Sorry?
Oh, GitHub.
Oh, GitHub itself. Right, okay.
As in the complete code base, as in lines of code that is out there.
Okay, got you. Yeah,
I reckon the majority would be still written in C.
You think?
I mean, never mind our favorite operating system.
Yeah.
You will not find any C++ code in the Linux kernel. You will, of course, find a Rust crate to facilitate Linux kernel modules. We spoke about this earlier this year, but if a chap called Linus Torvalds is anyhow to go by, that would be the next language of choice in a couple of years' time for production use. That doesn't necessarily mean that eventually the whole kernel will be rewritten in Rust. No, that's not going to happen, because you're looking at way too many man years that have been put into this code base. But you will see certain portions of especially drivers being coded in Rust going forward. It will take time, no doubt about that. And that doesn't necessarily mean that the days of C in the kernel are numbered, because that's just too much C out there in terms of the overall lines of code in the kernel. But Rust will start to make an appearance. That would be my take on the overall situation.
Yeah, it's actually in the Stack Exchange developer survey in terms of being below quite a few other ones, but it is on the list at least. So. And it's overtaken Scala. Look at that. There we go. Where were we? Yes.
The next question on that all-important list would be, will Snaps indeed conquer the world?
You mean Snapchat? Is that not for...
No, Snaps in terms of the canonical distribution format for packages.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess if you're using canonical, then yeah.
Sorry, you're not using canonical. Probably you would be using Ubuntu.
By the way, Rust is the most loved programming language.
Or something.
For your information, anyway, it was the most loved programming language.
I think we moved on.
No, we haven't.
I think we have.
We have now.
Okay. Let's officially conclude the subject of
programming language. Java isn't the most dreaded programming language. How did that happen? Anyway.
What exactly? I mean, what happened? Who took over? Which language took over?
VBA.
No surprises there.
Is that even a programming language? Hang on.
I thought it was a macro or something.
Yeah. Oh, who was that guy who did Perl?
Larry Wall.
No, there was the interview that we did.
The guy who invented Perl is called Larry Wall.
Yeah, no, the guy who worked on the Perl project for a lot of his time. We did an interview with him earlier this year.
Randall Schwartz.
Yes.
But he didn't invent Perl.
No, I didn't say he invented Perl. Or did I? I don't know. I can cut this out.
I certainly will, Martin.
Thank you. Anyway, yeah. We should have asked him why Perl is number three on the most dreaded programming language list.
It's probably old age and nomenclature in terms of expressiveness. Okay, moving on.
Okay, moving on.
Subject.
Not programming languages. Yeah.
No, I mean, you remember the conundrum about Canonical issuing more and more software. Chromium, of course, comes to mind as Snaps. Plus the fact that Snaps actually, and this is something that probably not that many people know, requires a working AppArmor these days. I don't know when Canonical made that move, but my suspicion is at least 2004, if not before. As in the, what's it called? Focal Fossil, something like this. Yes, Focal Fossil. If you disable or remove AppArmor, Snaps won't necessarily work anymore. And you see, this is the interesting bit, because essentially you're coupling previously independent modules together. So you're introducing a dependency that is not necessarily required. And this is what I see as an issue, because Linux, never mind free and open source software in general, is all about choice. So by moving into that direction, and this is what you see in the community, and this is what you see on many discussions and many blog entries and so forth, you're forcing a policy upon the community. And that is met by objection, which I totally understand. Because this is not necessarily about freedom anymore. I mean, if you have to have a working AppArmor if you want to run Snaps, that's a major thing.
Yeah.
Because if you choose SA Linux over AppArmor, good luck with that. Because these two frameworks do not play along well. So by using Snaps, you are essentially, if you're using a recent Linux, if you're using a recent Ubuntu distribution, you are forced more or less to resort to AppArmor. That limits your freedom. Same goes for the tie-in of GNOME and systemd.
But then you could always install the non-Snap version of whichever software you wanted to reuse.
Of course, yes. That's always your way out.
But well, that's an interesting prediction. Yeah, how many people will still be using the Snaps? Indeed. Okay.
How many people will, in that case, choose to move off Ubuntu? Good question. I mean, the same goes, as I said, the same goes for GNOME and systemd. I mean, so GNOME now relies on something called the login daemon coming from systemd. No wonder KDE has a field day about propagating themselves or promoting themselves as the platform independent choice of desktop, because they run on BSD, they run on Linux, they run on any open source software, that is pretty much called POSIX compliant, whereas GNOME requires these days the logind functionality coming from systemd.
Okay, so why did they make this move?
Get in touch with GNOME at redhat.com or something. I mean, it was their choice. It's a project decision, but I cannot follow this because it limits the variety of operating systems you can use. The technical reasoning behind this might be perfectly viable, but this is not about freedom anymore. This is about limiting your choices, if you ask me.
Yeah, no, that's... well, let's choose a different Linux distribution. Do you have any ones you could recommend to the listeners?
Arch comes to mind. Arch, of course, uses systemd.
Is this a beautifully maintained piece of Linux, is it?
Absolutely. Well, there's still Linux from scratch and Gentoo, of course. And of course, can.
What's your experience with Gentoo?
I've never used it, to be honest with you.
I toyed
around with the idea of actually going the Linux from scratch route down, but then something else called life happened in between, and Linux from scratch is not for the faint-hearted, because what you're doing essentially, you are taking one machine, you're taking a second machine, and then you are building your system using the first machine for the second machine. As in compiling the kernel, compiling each and every packet on that first machine to be deployed on that second machine. Mm. That, of course, gives you a system that is completely suited to your needs at the expense of a pretty steep learning curve. Because what you have to do, you have to bootstrap the second machine using the first machine. So that requires on the first machine at least a working Linux system, GCC and all the rest of the toolchain that you need, at least to compile the kernel and an initial user land. For somebody who is new to Linux, I wouldn't necessarily recommend that route because, as I said, the learning curve is quite steep.
Yeah.
But if you've mastered this, you know what this crack is all about. Because you, at that stage, you know in Linux inside out. Especially the build process.
Yeah. I guess first step would be to go to something like Gentoo, as you say, to before you go that far, right?
I mean, Gentoo has at least... the advantage of a rudimentary package management system. If I'm completely mistaken, this stuff is... You can't get some of the packages pre-compiled?
I think it was for a Gentoo special.
Check out Emerge. That would be the package management of choice in Gentoo, if I'm completely mistaken. Yeah, the Gentoo special is planned for May. That means that Martin has between now and May or April to read up on it.
Hang on a minute. I thought you were the operating system guy.
Martin, it's called your education. This is the important bit.
Right. Next thing, you know, you're going to advise me to use the WSL for Windows again. I'm not sure I should be...
Well, why don't you put one up off your many Windows machines and check it out?
I have. It's useless. Anyway.
Oh, dear.
Moving on from the Microsoft slanging. Okay. Right. So the next question is... Actually, we should have done this when we were talking about cloud, but is OpenCore the solution?
I reckon... Okay.
It's the solution to which problem?
Yes. It's late now. And I'm not as drunk as I planned to be. So the answer to that is somewhat philosophical. I mean, I reckon it depends on where you draw the line, right? In terms of, I mean, the money.
First of all, is it the solution to your question?
You put the question in, I think.
No, that was not your. This was your question.
So the jury is allowed to put the question in.
Okay.
let's define OpenCore first for the listenership who's not familiar with the terms or the difference between open source and OpenCore.
Yep, let's go for it.
Pardon?
Okay, OpenCore is taking an open source project, which is the majority of the functionality lives there, as in the word core, the center of its software is open source, surrounded by non-open source components, like a lot of companies adopt to deal with extra feature or monitoring or stuff like that, right? They have stuff around it to sell, to be able to sell it. Otherwise, it would just be an open source project. So, OpenCore, Redis is one of these examples. There are many more, of course.
Redis Labs would be an OpenCore company, to be precise, yes.
Hmm. Actually, Enterprise DB is not an OpenCore company because their database is actually not a clone. It's not. What's the word?
Something that they made up.
No. What's the word? It's
a fork.
Fork. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome, yes. Martin.
Not a knife. A fork. It's a fork of Postgres. So that's no longer an open core company or product. Right?
Similar to Red Hat, which of course is not an open core company, but rather a full blown open source company.
Yes. Well, no, not all their components are open source, are they?
Name one.
Well, what do you call it? OpenShift, for example.
OpenShift is open source.
There is an OpenShift version of OpenShift, yes, but that's not the same as the Red Hat version of OpenShift.
What? OpenShift is open source.
Yeah, the open source project is OpenShift project is open source indeed, but OpenShift from Red Hat is not the same version. It has more features.
Different. I thought the code base was. I mean, CentOS is the Red Hat code base open source. There's no difference between Red Hat and CentOS, apart from the support model and stuff. My understanding is that OpenShift was pretty much the same. It's the Kubernetes amended by open source components coming from Red Hat. Are you sure about this?
Well, last time I looked, which is a year ago, maybe?
About 20 years ago, yes.
Anyway. Okay. Ignoring this detail.
Yes. Okay. Full disclosure. The money has to come from somewhere. I see both sides of the coin. Red Hat have been pretty successful of turning an open source code base into an open source business model. But then there are open core companies like Redis Labs, like Confluent, you name them, that have to hire employees and pay the bills too. So I see both sides of the coin. Yeah, there is certainly market for a pure open source company, like, as I said, Red Hat, but OpenCore, of course, is a viable business model. Is that what I'm looking for? Two, because like Confluent, like Redis Labs, the revenue that they make funds an awful lot of open source contributions, never mind drives innovation there. And Redis is probably the best example because
it's an example, but yes. Yeah.
The majority of the contribution to the open source of the open source code base these days come from Redis Labs employees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, the alternative is obviously you have an open source project and as a company you offer support, right, which is what the original...
Nextcloud, Red Hat, that sort of thing,
Yeah. But then if you do this, all you're doing is all your innovations, all your IP is open source and means that anybody can use this like the cloud vendors do. And so you have almost no added value yourself anymore in terms of you're just basically giving your IP away, aren't you?
Unless you restrict this with a certain licensing model. Not Creative Commons, but what's
the license? RSAL.
Yeah, that is soft.
This is an example.
Redis Lab, what's it called? Redis Soft.
Source Available License. Yes. Yeah.
But there was a predecessor called Creative Commons, but...
You're the license guy, you should know.
I don't. I can't.
Okay. Anyway. All right, not to worry. It'll be in the show notes.
Maybe.
Okay. Yeah, so OpenCore, as a company that is not selling proprietary software, you have to do something right. So OpenCore being a good compromise there.
Indeed. Commons class, it was called.
Yes. Very good.
And the controversy around it, yes. About 1.5 years ago, I suppose. By the way, quite a few OpenCore companies went down that route. Couchbase, Redis Labs, Confluent, all come to mind.
Yep.
I'm just saying.
Well, they have to, right?
Well, I reckon that it's
if you want to be a business, that is, right?
I mean, as I said, Nextcloud and in my opinion, Red Hat still do that open source thing. I mean, we had Frank Karliczek on the show about 2 episodes ago, and he confirmed that Nextcloud, never mind what's it called, Nextcloud Talk, whatever, is purely open source. So that will be the prime example for pure open source play company. Granted, slightly smaller than Red Hat.
It
is successful.
Yep.
PHP or not. Okay, what's left?
What's left? I think.
No questions.
We have covered pretty much all of it. Okay, so final question is, what is your biggest prediction for 2021?
Linux in Laws will continue to be the primary open source podcast.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. No. I like that one.
Excellent. We are making progress.
We will. Okay. My prediction is we will have sponsorship after this episode. Sponsorship from Microsoft, Apple.
Microsoft, Apple.
Yes.
Nvidia. Excellent. Just keep the cash coming. We do take major credit cards. Just get in touch. No worries. We do accept Bitcoin. All major cryptocurrencies. And we also accept a Ford Fiesta for Martin as a bargain, as a payment guide. If this is what you're looking for, by all means, just get in touch. Indeed. The email address is Ford_Fiesta@linuxinlaws.eu.
We need to speak to IT phones. The email address is
I mean, Martin, if you haven't fired them, that's your job. Come tomorrow morning.
All right, sounds good.
Martin, we do have some feedback.
Yes, excellent feedback this time.
Kevin wrote.
What did Kevin write?
Kevin wrote, I love the show. Great interview with Frank Karliczek. I'd love to know more about Nextcloud.
Excellent.
Kevin, the URL is actually nextcloud.com, if I'm not completely mistaken. The source code is on, yes. Yeah. And of course, the GitHub repo is there for you to clone the code, and off you go.
Excellent.
But hey, wait, there's more.
There's more.
We also sent a mail to the HPR mailing list saying, I just listened to the interview with Frank Karliczek on Linux in Laws, and it got me thinking. The interview was mostly about the project itself, which is fine, but it left me wanting more. Don't we all? And I suspect there are people in HPR that can satisfy my requests. And then he goes on with the list of things that he would love to see.
Ah.
Like, I'd love to have maybe a short series on that. Now, that might look at how Nextcloud is installed and configured, then at some of the applications you might want to use. What are the best apps to replace things like the Google apps, for instance, and so forth? There hasn't been an answer on this one, so I suppose that much, nobody... Maybe we should know, actually, maybe we should do a second show on Nextcloud, this time about 20 hours with a detailed installation walkthrough.
Yeah, did you not do this already?
No.
No? No, not a show, but install it.
Oh, yeah, I did, of course.
Can you not just send them your notes?
Well, there are no notes because I simply, I simply followed the installation instructions on the website and off I went. It's not rocket science, Kevin.
Oh, there you are. You heard it here first.
Exactly.
It's not rocket science. And if it is, then you can get in touch with Chris.
You just want to know what you're doing as usual, especially the version that I installed last, but the warning was actually, or the caveat was on the website, that it only supported 7.3 as in terms of PHP. But once you know this, it's all plain sailing. The documentation is actually quite good on the website. Full credits to somebody called Frank Karliczek and team, because this is actually very, very straightforward. All you need is a decent spec machine, PHP and some other modules, but these are all documented. But needless to say, you can also put this into a Docker container and off you go.
Cool.
And with that, we are at the end of the feedback. Okay. Of course, there will be a B-sides of this show. Yes.
B-sides and a thing.
The thing, yes, we're going to come to the thing in a minute.
Okay.
The B-sides, of course, will be available once this show is on Hacker Public Radio. We are aiming, once you hear this, we are recording this, as I said, early in the year, and we are aiming to put this on Hacker Public Radio between Christmas and New Year. By that time, you will have the B-sides. Plus, of course, the thing that we already teased... In the last episode, that would actually be a special of something called the Dark Side, as in the Dark Side Tech Support.
Mm.
Watch out for it. It's really a special.
It is special in many ways. And
absolutely. It's not for the faint-hearted. As a matter of fact, it's XXX.
It's also not for the musically inclined.
No, it's certainly not for any minors or underage people under the age of 35. And as I said, it's not for the faint-hearted, but it's pure black humor. If you think the inside of a new MacBook Pro is black, just listen to this Dark Side special. You'll be amused, for want of a better expression. See you on the other side. This is the Linux In-Laws.
You come for the knowledge,
but stay for the madness. Thank you for listening. This episode of Linux In-Laws is proudly sponsored by the Future. Next week's lotto numbers. Cute little viruses from China that made an appearance on the international stage, cunningly disguised as Mrs. Pandemic. Unforeseen developments for certain US presidents. We have it all. No prepayments necessary. No credit cards accepted. Neither major nor minor. Just wait, and we will simply happen. No need to fret or get bored. We've got you covered, never mind what people, politicians, and other animals will tell you. The future is always different from what they tell you to expect. A happy 2021, and wait for us next year. We will certainly be around. This podcast is licensed under the latest version of the Creative Commons license, type attribution share alike. Credits for the intro music go to Bluesy Roosters for the song Salute Margaret.
to Twin Flames for their piece called The Flow, used for the segment intros, and finally to Celestial Ground for their song Sweet Justice, used by the Dark Side. You find these and other ditties licensed under CC at Jamendo, a website dedicated to liberate the music industry from choking copyright legislation and other crap concepts.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.